You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Friends, happy Pride and welcome to Pod Friends. My name is Matt Scott. I am your host and I am so thankful that you are joining me on this Pod Friends journey. If you're just tipping your toe in, well, welcome. Thank you so much. You'll probably be happy to know that all the episodes of Pod Friends can be found in the Pod Friends feed, robiswebsite.com/podfriendsfeed, where you can subscribe and hear from people in this RHAP community. And one thing I love about Pod Friends, and I'm excited to share as we dive into today's episode, which is the Father's Day-ish episode, Father's Day-aligned episode, is that there's so much that we don't see or that we don't know about people. I always think of that MTV diary show, which said, you think you know, but you have no idea. And that's how I feel about a lot of our guests, including this week's guest, who is none other than David Bloomberg, who you know, of course, from the rules that dictate how people could win, how they should play Survivor. And of course, on the other hand, unfortunately, why they lost. And so I am thrilled for you to hear the conversation with David, because David is someone who has been around not only this RHAP community, but in fact, longer than this RHAP community has been in existence in this reality TV in this reality TV world. In fact, having his own website in this space before a lot of people were really commentating on and talking about reality TV, all the way to now, where he hosts Why Blank Lost and where you can see him on RHAP. David is newly retired. He's figuring out what that entails, what that looks like. He is a father of two sons in their 20s, which makes him a great fit for this Father's Day edition of the podcast. A former environmental engineer and manager, someone who definitely takes science seriously, and someone who also comes from a background that that I didn't fully expect in talking with him. And so it was great to have the conversation to dive in again about fatherhood, retirement, the rules, of course, lots about the rules. And about the evolution of this community, again, beyond just RHAP, what has the journey looked like to where we are today? And how does David stay on top of it and adapt and embrace things like TikTok and Twitter tips? Shout out to Twitter tips. Maybe you want to leave David a tip. Who knows? But, you know, I really love to hear from his perspective and learn from it. And, you know, you hear us talk about it a little bit, but this was definitely an intergenerational conversation. It was a meaningful conversation. And at the end, to be honest with you, David and I ended thinking there's so much more we could have talked about. Like, we didn't talk about the time that he appeared on the Morton Downey Jr. show to argue with psychics. We didn't talk about the time he turned down going on Oprah to talk about miracles. So there's so much more about David that's interesting. Might have to do a part two of this some point. So we'll figure that out. Speaking of Father's Day, I also just want to send a lot of love to people. I know that we have a really diverse community. We have some people who are fathers. We have some people who are probably going to become fathers, who want to be fathers. We have others who probably don't. And actually, Dave and I talk a little bit about that over the course of the podcast. But I also want to send love to people who are having a challenging day today. I'm someone who lost my dad 5 years ago to a rare form of leukemia. And my dad at the time was my best friend and really continues to be one of my biggest heroes and inspirations. And so just want to say that as we talk about fatherhood and what that's looked like for David, that if you are someone who is having a rough day on Father's Day or this week because of Father's Day or in relation to this conversation, I just want you to know that I see you. I'm showing you so much love, sending you all my love, and just want you to know that you're not alone with all of this and that a number of people in this community also can relate to that struggle as well. Again, sending so much love. Before we dive in, I just want to thank you all for being here on the journey. I mentioned you could subscribe, leave those 5 stars. Please leave a review. Let me know what you think. I'm going to start taking a look at those for season 2 to see what's coming up. You could do that at robhiswebsite.com/podfriendsfeed. You could watch on YouTube at robhiswebsite.com/YouTube, where you could subscribe and see videos just like this one if you're listening to the audio. You could suggest a guest if you go to bit.ly/podfriendsnom. You could become an RHAP patron at robhiswebsite.com/Patreon. And if you go to the show notes, you could find so much more, like where to follow Podfriends on social media, where to follow me on social media, spoiler alert, at Hey Podfriends on social media, especially on Twitter. And of course, at Matt Scott GW on Twitter and all the places. You could even email me at podfriends@robhiswebsite.com. That's podfriends@robhiswebsite.com. So there's so much, but I don't want to hold you all from hearing the conversation with David, because I had a lot of fun and learned a lot from him, his perspective, his worldview, his life. And so without further ado, let me welcome David Bloomberg. Making his way to the podcast, hailing from Springfield, Illinois, he is the creator of the former website Reality News Online, as well as the Reality TV Halls of Fame and Shame. Here on RHAP, you may know him ever since Survivor Cambodia as the co-host of the series Why Blank Lost, breaking down why survivors lose and what you can learn from them. He's the voice teaching us to scheme and plot, but not too much, to be flexible and not let our emotions control us, to play the social game and lower our threat level, and to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong, and so much more. A recently retired engineer, a father of two in their 20s, and someone who proves that rules are made to be broken. Please welcome David Bloomberg. I do feel the need, David, you know, as the more seasoned podcaster here, the more seasoned RHP podcaster here, if you were me, how would you start this episode?
I mean, I always start them the same way, so that's kind of hard. You know, I just say, welcome to Why Blank Lost. Oh. And go from there into usually some sort of little, you know, little bit.
I think I could probably do something that's like, welcome to Why David's Here. I didn't really work that out.
Hey, it works.
It works. We'll go with that. So welcome to Why David's Here. I'm Matt Scott. This is weird. I'm going to abort mission. But David, thank you for being here and for being part of this pod friends journey. And well, I mean, maybe a good place to start is what's up? That should be my official first question. What's up? And then just what's run up? With it.
Yeah. What's up is, well, for me, what's up is I just retired from my job of over 30 years. People watching Why Blank Lost saw that. I originally hadn't brought it up, but Jessica brought it up. And then I, season wrap up, I rubbed it in to Jessica, Tiffany, and Voce, you know, wearing a Hawaiian shirt and everything. So.
Wow. Okay. Well, look, you're the news is out there, but I guess maybe another question I have for you, just as we start out, as you're in new retirement, do you have any idea why you're here?
Do I have any idea what, like,
I don't mean in a universal sense. Okay. No, I mean, like, in this Pod Friends episode, what, like, why do you think people want to hear from you and I want to hear from you?
Well, I hope they want to hear from me. You know, because there's some interest that I've been doing this for so long. I think it's actually because your logo is a couch and I podcast from a couch. And so it's
your couch.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm one of the few people who podcasts from a couch.
I think that's the one piece that people didn't know is that your couch is the Pod Friends logo couch.
That's so right.
Look, no, I really want to talk with you today to have a little bit of an intervention, because as this comes out, this is like the Father's Day edition of Pod Friends. And, you know, I like to think to myself, if I, you know, I don't have any kids, but I'm like, if I were a dad, I would be a cool dad, not a strict dad. And then I look at you, Dave, and I'm like, you might be a cool dad, but you have a lot of rules. And that to me doesn't sound like a lot of fun. So I think this also might be the end of the interview if you're just offended and walk off. But
No. I think I was somewhere in between. I think I was pretty strict in certain things. But I think that both of my kids, who are now grown, they're 26 and 23, they would say that they got away with some things. They have told me that they got away with some things. You know, one of them was better at pulling the wool over our eyes than the other one. You know, one would fold upon being confronted, whereas the other one would just stand fast and be like, no, I did not do that.
Not to expose them. And I also realize that there's a 50% chance that it's one or the other. So that's a whole other thing. But is there like an example of the one folding versus an example of the one who's like staying steadfast?
The one who folded, for example, he had been punished and was not allowed to watch TV for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I went out and we had the TV set to like the home network, HGTV or something like that. When we came back, we turned the TV on and it was on like Nickelodeon.
Well played.
You're busted. And so as soon as we confronted him with that, he was like, yeah, you know, he saw it. The other one, I think we could have confronted him with video. And he would have been like, no, no, that did not happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, but, you know, like I said, they're both grown now and they're both great. I'm very proud of both of them.
So this is kind of something I'm wondering, you know, we have the rules, you mm-hmm. know, you're famous for the rules. I will, David, could you just like list out the rules off the top of your head? I realize there's a poster behind you.
Yeah, there's a poster behind me. There might be a mug here.
There's also the mug.
Here, I'll put the mug here just so I don't get it wrong. Cause I, although the writing on it's a bit small. Yeah. Rule number one, of course, is scheme and plot.
Yeah.
Rule number two, don't scheme and plot too much.
Mm-hmm.
Rule number three, be flexible. Mm-hmm. Rule number four, don't let your emotions control you. Rule number five. Yes. Yeah. Well, it is. You're right. And a lot of these are actually.
Yeah.
You will see I am checking it because the last thing I want to do is get my own rules wrong. And I always doubt, you know.
I am trying to set you up for that.
Yeah. So rule number five is pretend to be nice and play the social game. Rule number six, don't be too much of a threat. Rule number seven is know how to handle idols, advantages, and we've recently added rules of the game. And these, of course, are the survivor rules. And then rule number eight is it used to be the one that Rob loved so much, which was vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong.
Mm-hmm.
It was modified to keep your end goals in mind. So basically, you should be voting with your end goals in mind, not for any short term game. And then as a subtitle, basically, it's the voting out weak, then strong.
So the big question I really have, though, is you created these rules. How old were your kids when you created the rules, David?
Well, it was after season one of Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
So I originally wrote them as a newspaper column.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote it as, you know, what future Survivor players need to know or need to learn. And so that was, you know, what was it, 21 years ago, roughly? Mm. And so, you know, my oldest son was about five. And, you know, ever since then.
I think you might see where I'm going with this, though. I'm curious about why they don't use the rules against you more often.
Well, they.
You set yourself up.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, there may have been some scheming and plotting on their part.
Mm-hmm.
And I have said before, these rules can be useful in real life in certain ways, too. You know, I will say, you know, if you're in a job, you may need to scheme and plot a little bit, but don't do it too much or else you'll get caught and things like that. You know, but really, this is so neither of them grew up as a Survivor fan. This is mm-hmm. where I consider you know, my biggest failing as a parent, in that because I was covering Survivor and this was in the days, you know, before TiVo, you had VCRs, but if you missed something, you know, you had to wait till the show was over and rewind it. And I was posting recaps on my website immediately after the show aired.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't one of these lucky people who today get access to the episode ahead of time, you know, like when we see Entertainment Weekly or Xfinity or some of the other places immediately pop up with recaps. That's because they had access to the episode ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have that, except on very, very rare occasions. So what I would do is on Survivor night, I would come downstairs. We used to have a door between our kitchen and downstairs. We eventually got rid of it, but I would close that door
mm-hmm.
and I would watch Survivor. And so unlike some of these people that we now see on Survivor, they're like, I watched it as a kid with my parents. I didn't do that. And they just never got into it. And you know, my oldest watched the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see if he keeps watching. They're both Big Brother fans. They both really like Big Brother.
Wow.
But just not Survivor. You know, I failed there.
That's interesting. Look, if that's your biggest failing as a parent, or at least your biggest self-reported failing as a parent, then that's pretty good. But it's interesting. It always amazes me when people don't fall in love with Survivor as much as I'm in love with Survivor. You know, there's like the way that you approach Survivor, even with the rules. And, you know, if half the people knew, like, what? There are rules for how to do this. It's not just lying to people and backstabbing. Like, no, it's really kind of complicated, actually. And there are a lot of social dynamics in there. I think that they would appreciate that Survivor is this fully formed thing. But I like one reason I'm excited for this conversation for Pod Friends with you is because you've been around this world of Survivor, not only as a fan, of course, but in this way, covering it from the very beginning. You have the rules that are so deeply embedded in the game that there are people who are referencing them in their, for better or for worse, in their exit press, in their intro press. Like, I'm going to follow David's rules. And we see how that works out, right? People referencing your rules in live reality games, online reality games, all of the things. But something I feel like there's so much that I still don't know about you and your backstory. Even one thing I'm curious about, though, before going like way, way back is like, obviously you've talked so much about Survivor. You've had these rules. I don't remember. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't remember seeing you on Survivor back in the day.
No.
So I'm curious. Just in case, I don't know. Maybe you changed your name or something like that. There were a few other Davids. That might have been the problem. But like, I don't know. What's been your relationship with that? Have you ever wanted to be part of it, or did you just enjoy, you know, watching from afar? Do you still want to be part of it? I guess is a valid question.
Yeah, I mean, over time, I have wanted to be a part of it, but my health has always been an issue. Mm-hmm. So first, about 10 years ago, I was like one third more of a person than you see now. I lost about 90 pounds in about 9 months. It was not the healthiest way to do it, but and so before that, I was overweight enough that there was no way I was going on Survivor. Mm-hmm. I also had bad knees. I also had a thyroid problem. I had most of my thyroid out due mm-hmm. to an illness. And so all these different things, I have asthma, which was worse then. So all those things kind of combined together. I'm like, well, they're never going to let me take thyroid medicine on Survivor. Mm. And by the time I learned, oh, yeah, they do let you take your normal daily medications. I had other issues come up. And I also saw what Survivor can do to people. You know, those close up shots of Stephen Fishback's feet. That's enough to push anyone away from playing the game.
Yeah. No comment. Stephen Fishback, who may or may not be, who hopefully will be a future interviewee on Pod Friends, probably has lovely feet these days. He's in DC here, by the way, somewhere. So if I see him out in the summer with his flip flops, I'll let him know. Hopefully he never hears this. You can continue talking about Stephen's nasty feet.
Well, I mean, it was just everything, you know, the injuries that people have said that they've had, the health problems that they've had. And I mean, those sorts of things, as much as I want to play. The other thing is, these days, people are going in knowing who I am.
Mm. Yeah.
If I mean, I have been in other online games where people are like, we need to target Bloomberg first because he's the guy who talks about why people lost, you know?
Right.
And so I can only imagine in Survivor, if you were on Survivor and playing against me and you saw me there, wouldn't you be like, I have got to get this guy out because, I'll show him why he lost. I just know it would happen. I might have been able to get away with it before we went to video, but now I'd have to give a fake name and people would be like, yeah, that's not who you are. So I just really feel like in many ways, and I'm not comparing myself to Rob at all, but I think Rob has said similar things. If he goes back, which hopefully someday he will, but I think that if he goes back, there will be a contingent of people who are like, yeah, get him out first.
Yeah, it's rough. It's sad, too. And it is interesting, though, that you mentioned the online and these other reality games. Have you played a lot? I know you've played, you know, different games like Mafia and related games, but have you played any like Survivor based games?
No, I just haven't had the time. Maybe I will now.
Yeah.
I guess I should also mention, by the way, when I said retired, I should have said this before. That's from my day job, not from podcasting. This is like not my swan song here or anything, you know.
I'm glad. Yeah, I'm glad that we didn't get that. I'm glad you clarified that just so people didn't. But honestly, I mean, you know, retirement is pretty big business if you ask like Tom Brady or someone. So maybe we should just pretend we'll cut it out. We'll just pretend that you're fully retired.
Right. Yeah.
like outside of the rules themselves, I guess I'm curious as we talk about this before moving on. Have there been, I don't know, I'm curious how, like, what the response to you has been from people in the community in general. And you've had 20 years of being visible in the community. So maybe there's been a flow to that. But in my mind, rules, well, there's so many things I could say about rules. Rules, some would say they're made to be broken. Rules, others would say they're not a lot of fun. To be the guy who's associated with the rules, though, is an interesting role. You know, you could be viewed as someone who has a lot of expertise. You could also be viewed as someone who's not, you know, not as fun, not like more of a buzzkill. Like, come on, David, why are you bringing the rules in here into this conversation?
Well, and,
what's that? Like, what's that outside perception been like? And I'm also curious, like, how you've heard from people over time. I loved when you were mentioning the VCRs a few minutes ago, for example, but like, obviously, there's been the evolution from the forums to social media. What has that feedback been, though, along the way?
Well, I mean, when I started, it was just. So let me go way back to how I started. And some of this I've talked about before. Yes, the Wayback Machine.
Yeah.
So I, you know, started not writing about reality TV. I started writing in general about science and pseudoscience. And this was just an interest of mine. And I'm an engineer. But I'm the type of engineer that is unlike many other engineers. And I've worked with enough of them. I know the cliches. I've taught them. I've worked with them. The cliche is engineers can't write. I have always been able to do both. And so even when I became an engineer, there was the question of, well, do I want to go down that path or do I want to go down a different path? And so I was writing, and at first I wrote for a local newsletter. You know, you'd like the VCR reference newsletter. There's an old time reference.
Paper kind,
mailed. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I had a monthly column there, among other things. I started also doing some writing for a couple of niche magazines in that same area. Then I started doing some freelance writing. And then I started doing book reviews, primarily of nonfiction books. Ended up doing it for my local paper, where I did like two nonfiction book reviews a month. And then someone else did a couple of fiction book reviews a month. And so this became a regular thing. I did it for, like I said, some other publications. And then I thought, well, you know, I don't like that these appear in the newspaper and I've read this whole book and I got paid a little bit for this review, but it doesn't appear anywhere else. No one else can see this. So, you know, the web was opening up and I mean, before that, even, you know, even going back further, I had been involved online for years and years since college. And, you know, before there was really an internet, a world wide web. Just on message boards. And so I was familiar with everything. And so anyway, I decided to find a place where I could publish. I found a website that paid per click. So per impression, rather.
Right.
Everybody who read something, I got paid something. Now, they were paying what today you would look at and say, is an extraordinary overpayment. Okay. And this was in the days when people were just putting tons of investment seed money into websites. It was the dot-com boom.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was getting a very little bit with that, but it got me involved in some discussion forums. And I saw some what other people were talking about. And some other people were talking about how they wrote about Survivor. And I was like, oh, and I looked at their articles and I was like, oh, my God, I could do so much better than this. And, you know, I was watching the show. I was interested in the show. And I was like, I should start writing about the show. So I started writing about it, started, you know, getting those all important impressions and, you know, started building from there. Well, as I said, that was the dot-com boom. What happened after the dot-com boom? The dot-com bust.
Yeah.
This company could not sustain it. We saw it coming. All the writers in the forum, you know, the company was denying throughout, you know, they were like, no, everything's fine. Everything fine. Literally until the night that the repo people came and took their servers, they were denying that they were in any financial trouble.
Wow.
And so they went out of business owing like a lot of people a lot of money. They owed me at the time $3,000, which to me was a lot of money at the time. And I mean, it's still, you know, a decent amount of money. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Fine. But some of us had foreseen this, and there was another company that had opened up that was like, okay, we will create a website for you. We will do the work. We'll put together the website. You just provide the content and we'll split ad revenues. Okay. So their Reality News Online was born. And so I started writing for, you know, writing all the articles there. The first official article that appeared on Reality News Online was Why Kel Lost. So that was Survivor Australian Outback.
Yeah.
And from there, it just, you know, I just kept going and I started adding new writers and, you know, just making, you know, making friends with people, adding new writers. But what I was not was really, I was not really involved in the community. So that's a very long answer to getting to what your original question was.
Yeah.
Part of it was I didn't have really that much time to get involved in the community. I was still, you know, I was working a full-time job. I was raising kids. I had a family. And part of it was I didn't want to accidentally plagiarize anything. So I didn't want to read someone else's article and then accidentally do the same thing. Which looking back, I don't think I should have worried about that. I think there are ways to incorporate other people's thoughts as we do now, you know, as long as you give them proper credit. But at the time that's, you know, that was my thought. So I never had a message board or anything like that because I knew how much work it was to moderate a message board. When I said I had been involved in message boards since college, I had moderated a number of different message boards, including some internationally spanning ones. I created rules, you'll be surprised to hear, for some of these message boards, some of which are actually still in existence, I think, some of these rule sets. And so I knew how much work it was to moderate a message board. I didn't want to deal with it. So that's, you know, I just, we wrote and we told people to email us if you wanted to contact us. And so what that website was missing was a sense of community with the people who were reading. We had a community among the writers as things grew, but we didn't have a community among the readers as much. And so like, if I could go back in time and, you know, change something about that, I think I would change that and create some sort of message board that would have gone along. Cause this was also before like Facebook groups were really a thing either.
Yeah.
Even Twitter, I only joined Twitter right at the tail end of my time on, you know, with Reality News Online. So that's a long answer to the first part of your question, you know, for the community back then.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, that there wasn't. Well, I guess it is interesting to hear all of this, to think about how everything's evolved. Like, you're talking about communicating with people before the internet was really the internet. And it's wild because that wasn't all that long ago. Like, when I was a kid, as a 30-year-old, I'll say for context for people, like when I was a kid, I remember, you know, our dial up and you had to have everything hardwired in, and then the little AOL, the dial up noise and AOL and all that stuff, and how like you had to have the little disc to install AOL. And you're even talking about like before that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm talking about for any of the people who might remember something called FidoNet.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Is that like a dog?
Yeah. It was. I don't know where they got the name, but it was a network of individual computer bulletin boards.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so there were local computer bulletin boards. People would call in directly to the computer hosting it.
Oh, my gosh.
And there were message boards there. And then, so some of these were local, and some of them were part of FidoNet. FidoNet had all these different forums. And what would happen is, so let's say that I was running it, which at one point I did. Let's say I was running the bulletin board. I ran at the time the Temples of Syrinx bulletin board, which is based off of a Rush song. And so
I won't even detour.
And so people would call in, they would see the messages on the message board. They could reply to one. Okay. If it's local, if they were replying to someone local, then that person, when they dialed in next, they would see it right away. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what would happen is I would dial in to somebody like a regional coordinator, okay, and pass all the messages to them. And then they would distribute it to the other message boards, but they would also distribute it to national and international coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have messages that took 3 or 4 days to get to their intended recipient. Wow. And you would have these, I mean, like you could have political arguments going on where you could even lose track of, you know, you could send a message and then you see something else and you send a message. And yeah, there are just days and days in between these. And that was, you know, that was message boards back in those days, which led, I think that went in. I'm trying to think of how long that went. I think that ended, at least for me, before Survivor.
Yeah.
But there were other, you know, message boards. There was Survivor Sucks. There were things like that. Now, I never really got into that because I was like, well, I like Survivor. Why would I go to a board that's called Survivor Sucks?
Right.
But I remember when I went to one of the finales. It was the first finale I went to in L.A. So I think it was our good friend Thailand. I don't remember how it happened, but I ended up getting together with other people who were from Survivor, you know, online media and message boards. They all knew each other. They knew me. I was embarrassed. I didn't know who any of them were. They were like, oh, hi, I'm so-and-so from Survivor Sucks. I'm so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, hi, you know? And yeah, I didn't know who they were. They were great people. But I didn't know who they were.
That's funny. It's funny though, because that's a lot of like, we still have that with podcasting at times, except there's very much an acknowledgement, like with some of the live shows and live events, like, oh, it's nice to meet you. They're obviously the person on the other end doesn't necessarily think, oh, you should know who I am or whatever. And so there is that relationship. And I think on Pod Friends at some point, I've talked a little with people, definitely off Pod Friends, I've talked to people about like parasocial relationships and what that kind of how those develop and what those look like. Like, oh, you think you like, I mean, I'm sure I had a parasocial relationship with most of the people who podcasts on the network. Like, oh yeah, Rob, I know you. And except I don't know you, for example. But yeah, it's interesting because just on this topic, I'm curious, is there, you know, kind of a two-part question. Is there anything you miss from that, the time you're kind of describing of the infancy of what you're doing, of the infancy of the internet? And then is there anything that you're glad that we left behind and, you know, that we don't have anymore?
I think what I miss about that is probably more selfishly, there were a lot fewer people doing it. So like when I was doing it, like I was at one point, my website was listed in Entertainment Weekly's top 100 entertainment websites.
Yeah.
And I had no idea this was coming. Like I got Entertainment Weekly, but one of my assistant editors like messaged the group. It was like, have you seen the new issue? And I'm looking at the issue. It was in an insert in the center and we were listed. And I was like, oh my gosh. And it was specifically for my interviews with Survivor players. And, you know, it's, but then as time went on, it became easier and easier to do a website and more people started putting together websites. And so there was just this proliferation. Now, again, that was totally selfish on my part. It's good to have more voices. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I wasn't thinking of it that way. At the time, I was like, who is this person who just created some sort of blog?
Yeah.
And did it? Because I never called myself a blog. I was a website. And, you know, we had editors. We didn't, you know, we had, you know, strict rules of, you know, that I sent out to all the writers. You know, this is the words you will capitalize. You know, this is the way you will refer to people. And so, you know, I tried to hold everything to a higher standard and I felt that we were kind of just drowning in the masses. And then podcasts came along and this guy named Rob shows up, you know,
you ruined everything.
I know, I've told him that. You know, but other people did too. So there were, you know, now things I don't miss is the number of hours I was spending.
Yeah.
I mean, I would wake up at probably 5:30 in the morning, edit and post articles that came in overnight, go to work, do my regular job, come home and, you know, probably usually eat dinner, but then spend another couple hours working on articles to post. And this was with, I had multiple, overtime assistant associate editors and just, you know, so many different writers and we were trying to cover so much.
Wow. Wow. This is like, it's fascinating because there's a lot that you did and took on. And then now I guess the part two of that question is like, what are the things, I guess, what excites you about how we do things now?
Well, for one, I'm not in charge. I don't have to work those hours.
Again, it's sorry, Rob.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is also quite honest, you know, Patreon didn't exist then. Ads were paying almost, you know, as I said, there was the dot-com bust. And so even after I had my own website, ad companies were still trying to figure out how to make it work. There was a time when I considered leaving my day job for the website.
Wow.
But I had two young kids. I had a wife. I had, you know, my job had good insurance. It, you know, it had, you know, all these different things. And what I was reading was, if you want to go freelance, you need to be working, making X percent to, you know, be able to level up.
Mm-hmm.
And I made that percent 1 year. And then the bottom dropped out again of all the ads. People realized you can't pay per impression. You can't even pay per click. You have to pay per purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And that really took the wind out of things. And so, you know, as time went on, it was, you know, there were more and more people who were, you know, who I had helping me and I was, you know, paying some of them. I do regret that I couldn't and didn't pay everyone who wrote for me. There just wasn't the money there. And I was putting in all these hours. And, you know, when I look back at it, I was probably making like $2 an hour. And so at one point, you know, I had a discussion, with my father, who helped me with my taxes at that time. And he was like, you know, at some point you need to make a decision what you're doing here because, you know, you're working all this time and I know you enjoy it, but Is it really worth it? And I was still considering that. And then my computer died and it took a lot with it. It was at the end, near the end of One World. And it just, my hard drive absolutely died on me. And it took with it a number of my passwords and my links to like FTP upload sites and all those other things. And I just said, well, okay. You know what? I knew I was coming close to making a decision. This ends it much more abruptly than I intended to, but it looks like my decision is made.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Wow. I don't know why this is. It's so interesting because what you're doing in explaining all of this is taking me and even probably a bunch of the listeners back to a time that, you know, I've thought about a little bit recently in passing, but definitely don't appreciate, which is that when your computer died, everything was gone. If your phone, you know, exploded, mm-hmm. your photos and everything aren't backed up. You don't have that all saved. And that also means you could lose your business or your livelihood or photos of your family or whatever else you have, right? So there's a lot there. And it also helps me appreciate just how much has gone into you getting to this point. And so I want to ask, actually, going back, because we've talked about we've maybe done this a little bit in reverse. We've talked about like the thing that's more familiar to people, more of the last 20 years, and even more of you starting things and as this creator. But I'm curious, like, where did the journey start, David? I'm curious, like, to go way back as far as your oldest memory. you know, how did you grow up? Where did you grow up? Because I think a lot of people, myself included, wonder, like, what is it that makes someone, one, someone who has an appreciation for rules, two, someone who creates something really in a time where other people weren't doing it, like pre-podcast era, and even pre-blog era. And a lot of people are probably wondering, like, one, what does it take for someone to, or like, what are the ingredients that make someone the type of person who is doing what you're doing? Because what you do, and we haven't even talked about like work and job and stuff outside of all of it, but what you do is probably like a pretty cool thing. Like, most of us as Survivor fans would love to cover Survivor as much as we do. Some of us, myself included, have the privilege of doing that. But, you know, going back, I'm curious, how did you grow up? Like, what were the ingredients that made you you?
That's a good question. I mean, I grew up, I'm the oldest of three boys in the Chicago suburbs. Mm-hmm. My mother was a teacher. My father worked in sales for at first a spring company. They made springs for mattresses. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, he lost his job in the Reagan economy.
Wow.
And we had to make do. We, you know, we went and sold things at flea markets. So my grandfather had a belt company, a belt factory, and we would take his belts and sell them at flea markets. My father met a guy there at flea markets who printed his own shirts. And so we started a deal with him, you know, selling shirts. And so, I would, you know, like I said, when I was in high school, my weekends were frequently doing that. My father would go to, like county fairs and sell shirts there too.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were some overnight trips where we would, you know, sleep in the van, the 71 Dodge van. And then he also, you know, tried a side business where he was selling mattresses. He actually had special mattresses made small enough to fit in the van. He would take them to people's homes so they could try them out.
Wow.
And he was just doing all these things to, you know, my mother still was working, but so ends could meet. And, you know, eventually he did get another job through his contacts in the industry at a foam rubber company. So that was good. But even then, you know, he had to commute into Chicago, which was quite a commute in terms of time, not so much distance, but the rush hour time. Mm. And so, yeah, that's, you know, how we were brought up. I was always good at math and always good at writing. Mm-hmm. and science. And so that's where it comes to, like I said earlier, you've got the engineer path or, you know, this writing path. And so I, you know, ended up going to school at, here we go, University of Illinois. I was a second generation University of Illinois. Both my parents were there. My kids were third generation. Went there, originally had planned to do a double major in two different types of engineering, instead dropped it. I majored in, what was, then called ceramic engineering, which is not the making of mugs.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yes.
I needed that.
Yeah. And, you know, because of, you know, the money situation was still not great. And I had a lot of AP credits. And so I did some summer school and I got it done in 3 years. And then I went to grad school and still in ceramic engineering. Now they call it material science and engineering. But I went to grad school. My intent was to get a PhD and work in research. The problem was that to get a PhD, you had to pass the PhD qualifying exams. I was never a good studier. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is going to sound absolutely egotistical. And I know that it does. In high school and sometimes in college, certain things came a little too easy for me. I never learned truly how to study.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What were some of those things that came too easy for you?
Just math and uh-huh. science and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I hate to talk about it this way, but like when I took the GREs, the graduate exams, I didn't even look at the book until the night before. I looked at it and went, oh my gosh, there's a logic section here. I didn't even know there was a logic section. I had no clue. I looked through it. I took it. I got a perfect on the logic section.
Mm-hmm.
You know, similarly on the SAT, I got a perfect on the math section. And again, this sounds like great things. And it was. Obviously, I don't want to downplay myself, but I also don't want to like sit here and pat myself on the back because I never learned how to study. So when it came time for PhD qualifying exams and I had to sit down and try to study everything I had ever learned, plus some things I had never learned, I found that I had no idea where to start.
Wow.
I just could not do it. So I postponed it, and then I postponed it again. And then I said, you know what? I'm right now, I'm just going to get the master's degree. And unfortunately, that didn't happen either, because what ended up happening was I was working on low temperature glass, okay, which could be used in electronics purposes and other purposes. And there were a couple pieces of equipment that I need to use that kept breaking. And they were the type of thing that like takes months to get a new part in. And so I was working on this. And then my professor calls me in and says, the grant that you're working on that's paying you is expiring in 3 months. You need to wrap up your work. I was like, well, there's no way. Because it was a statistical analysis and I didn't have enough. Another thing that slowed me down, if I back up a little bit, was I had only planned to be a research assistant at that point. But he needed a teaching assistant because the university had recently introduced rules that teaching assistants had to pass an English fluency exam. And so one of the ones that he had planned to do teaching assistant for one of his classes failed that exam. And so he needed me to step in and do that. So that was more time away from my research. So I worked on this, and you know, low temperature glass doesn't sound terribly exciting. I recognize. I will say I did something a little more exciting leading up to that. The summer before my senior year, I worked at Argonne National Labs as an intern on high temperature superconductors, which were brand new at the time, ceramic superconductors. And those were pretty cool.
What is a ceramic superconductor, if I may? I know, David, but okay. the people, the ceramic thing.
Yeah. So a superconductor is something that conducts without losing any electricity along the way.
Okay.
And so this was, you know, over 30 years ago, obviously, closer to 32, 33, and they were yttrium barium copper oxides. They had been discovered, and they were trying to figure out, they did it at liquid nitrogen temperature, which was considered high temperature. So that,
okay.
People might have seen, well, depending on how old you are, the picture of, you know, you've got this hockey puck looking thing and a little magnet floating over it. That's what we were doing with superconductors then. And so I was lucky enough to get that internship and worked on those, ended up publishing one paper and being listed as a writer on another paper from that. And, you know, like I said, at the time I was planning to go into research. And so that was great. Moved on to the glasses, like I said, sort of fast forward back up. The professor was like, okay, you're out of time. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do here. I had a friend who was from a nearby town, and said, hey, this government agency where I work is hiring engineers. Why don't you work there? You can commute back on weekends and finish your research. And so that's what I did. I applied, I got a job, and my plan was to do that. And then I found out why that grant had run out with my professor. It's because he hadn't renewed it because he was moving to a different university to become the head of their department.
Tricky, tricky.
And
sneaky, sneaky, sneaky. Yes, scheming and plotting.
Yes. And so, you know, they don't keep around labs for professors who aren't there anymore. So I would have either had to find a way to attach myself to another professor, or what my professor said was like, oh, just put together the data you've got. I did not feel like I had enough data to really create something. And so I never had my dissertation. I never put it together. I had all the classwork done. And I just never got my master's because I couldn't do the dissertation.
Yeah.
But then I was in a different field. I was now in environmental engineering.
Well, one thing I want to ask about You know, something that's occurring to me as you take a long sip out of your mug with the rules is because I think about like even the rule of being flexible as one of them. And I've never really thought about this in the context of your rules, but I'm curious how much you see overlap with just your life and your journey. Cause it sounded like, I mean, I mentioned, you know, jokingly the head of the lab scheming and plotting a little bit out of, you know, not scheming and plotting too much because you didn't find out until much later, but so maybe that worked out. But I'm curious. Yeah. Like you had to be flexible in the face of what you were doing. Obviously it's kind of a crushing thing. If you like anyone could imagine working toward something, whether it's even like, the analogy of a puzzle where you're building the puzzle and you're almost at the end, but you can't find the pieces that you need to complete it. And it's like, well, I guess I can't complete the puzzle. And it kind of sounds like you were facing that at that point.
Yeah. I mean, and again, this sounds weird talking about myself in this way. I find in some ways that I can be flexible. I see other people who aren't as flexible. And I don't know if it's, I think it's just the way some people are hardwired. Mm-hmm. I can accept the answer, I don't know, for example.
Yeah.
Except when I ask my wife what we're doing for dinner and she says that. But other than that, you know, some things we just don't know. Whereas other people will be like, no, I must have an answer. And if I don't have an answer, I'll make up an answer. Mm-hmm. And I think that I have just been able to kind of move through changes in life and, you know, go with the flow as much as possible. Now, sometimes my personality has not been very go with the flow, and it's a lot easier for me to look back on it now. But like when I moved to, you know, where I live now, which was moving from grad school, I remember my mother saying to me, you know, David, this, you know, I don't know how you can do this. Just move somewhere where you know nobody and you're moving to a new job and everything else. And you don't know anybody there. And I was like, well, you just have to do what you have to do. And you figure it out. And so I think that there are, you know, everybody's different. And so that's one thing that I try to remember is that just because I can do something a certain way or think of something in a certain way doesn't mean everybody's going to do that or put themselves in someone else's position.
Yeah.
And so even my retirement, you know, people have been asking me, David, what are you going to do in retirement? I don't know. I had plans pre-COVID or I had thoughts about plans pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. A lot of those things I can't do right now. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. Right now, I don't know. There are some things that are very weird, you know, like I have been a saver my whole life. I have not been a spender, which, you know, one thing that has allowed me to retire now.
Yeah.
And so it's weird, this concept that I won't be saving money anymore. I will be pulling money out of the accounts that I was putting money into.
Mm-hmm.
That is weird, but you just, you know, I had to get past that. And a lot of like articles that I read are like, don't retire from something, retire to something. And I was like, yeah, that's great in theory.
It's a privilege.
Yeah. I'm retiring from this job because I cannot do it anymore. The stress levels are too high. Yeah. And so I'm retiring to not being in that job anymore.
Yeah. That's powerful. And I mean, that's awesome to hear you even talking about that. And I think, you know, I think about who our community is and the listeners. And, you know, one thing that I've heard a lot from pod friends so far is that people really appreciate hearing, you know, about people's journeys and about advice that they have and how they, you know, navigate some of these challenges. Because, you know, for a lot of people, for a lot of us, like we've had career transitions in the pandemic and just in general, like that's life. Even before the pandemic, a lot of people were facing those transitions. And long after whatever point it's actually over, we'll continue to face those transitions. And so I'm curious from your perspective, because I imagine a lot of the people listening to this listenership are like in their 20s, maybe 30s, some even younger, obviously some a little older too. But I'm curious about your advice that you would have for navigating some of the difficult transitions you face. But in particular, maybe the framing I want to add is like, is there advice that you would give to your sons, like in your kids, like in the context of all of this?
I mean, there's several pieces of advice that I give to them and have given to them. One is, you know, save as much money as you can. And, you know, I grew up looking at families around me who were, you know, as soon as they got a little bit of money, they spent it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came time for college and they were like, well, we don't have the money for college. Whereas my parents were more savers, which enabled us to also survive my father being laid off, as well as, you know, the work that he did. And so that's something that I have always done. You know, I hold on to cars for a long time. I don't, you know, I'm not the type of person to get a car every couple of years. I hold on to them often until they fall apart.
Mm.
You know, both of my sons are now driving cars that belong to either me or some other family member that we, wow, you know, we got for them. And so definitely saving what you can. You also just, you need to be doing something that you enjoy because, mm-hmm, you know, one of my sons has known what he wanted to do like since middle school. And he's doing that and he enjoys it. The other one had to figure it out a little bit, but I think he's in a place now where he's enjoying it as well. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, what you need to be able to do. So I wanted to do research, to go back to that.
Yeah.
And I vowed I will never work in an office. And then I worked in an office for 30 years. But I was lucky enough that the job posting that was available when I was looking was a more open thinking job role, not something where you just do certain things by rote. Because mm-hmm, there were some positions for engineers at the agency I worked where, yeah, you do the same thing over and over again. Mine, well, it may surprise you to know that my job, even as it changed for the last 30 years, involved writing rules, interpreting rules, enforcing rules.
You're consistent. If anyone ever says that you are not consistent, David, I'm going to just throw the book of rules at you.
Yes. And that's what leads to, when I was listening to the last episode and you were talking to Grace, and I think she mentioned being a rules lawyer.
Yep.
And I was thinking, that sounds like me. And then you called her the David Bloomberg of that podcast. And mm-hmm, I was like, oh, okay. And so, yeah, I have, you know, and I know this is a tangent from what you asked, but I have always been a rules kind of guy. When I played Dungeons and Dragons and similar games, I was a rules lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned I moderated message boards. I wrote rules. Before COVID, when I played a lot of live poker, I was almost always the one that the floor, and the floor is the one who's running the game, would consult at, let's call them the unofficial rooms. We'll call them home games. Where if something came up, they would say, well, David, how should we address this situation? Because they knew my familiarity with those rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I was writing these regulations, even as an engineer, not a lawyer, I was an engineer at law. It enabled me to take the two sides of my personality,
mm-hmm,
and combine them. And yeah, it helped to be a rules lawyer because you could look and say, how can someone try to poke holes in this? And how can we stop them from poking holes in this? Because, mm-hmm, you know, they were government regulations and you don't want someone to be able to find that little loophole and get in there. And, Let me just say that my experience with those who write laws, maybe not so careful all the time.
Interesting. I mean, and well, I imagine that that's something that someone who reads laws carefully would pick up on, because that's the, I mean, it's like the terms and conditions. Like, David, I'd be surprised if you told me that there was a term or condition that you never, you know, that you haven't read.
I don't usually read those. Those are too much for me, I got to admit.
Okay.
But yeah, it's funny because we talk about rules and rules and these rules, you know, these rules right here.
Yes.
Behind you. Are different because they're not, you know, Christian Hubicki has told me a couple of times, well, David, those are not really rules. They're more guidelines. You know, you should call them the guidelines. I'm like, no, they're already on a poster. They've been the rules forever, you know. And
that's bold. So,
yeah.
Christian, I don't know. He might have to issue a retraction or some kind of explanation for that. You can't just change the rules. You can't turn rules into suggestions, into guidelines. That, oh my gosh, that stressed me out. Yeah. I feel like that's a lot of reprinting posters and t-shirts and mugs and other things.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but that sort of rule type of thing is why, like, when Mike was not going to read his phrase on the most recent season of Survivor, and Steven got on Twitter and was like, no, it says you have to. And I was like, no, it doesn't. What it says is this. There's an if clause here and there's this here. And he's like arguing back and forth with me. And I'm like, Steven, I'm telling you, this is the way I would interpret it. If this were a rule, I would not have written it this way.
Right.
But you had Mike and you had Daniel, who is an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that the producers who wrote this, they didn't consult anyone. They wrote something and they thought it was fine until someone studied it and went, well, actually, if you look at it this way, you know, shortly before I retired, a question came up. There was a debate internally about some 50-year-old regulations at the agency where I was. And it was like, well, how are we interpreting them this way? Well, I mean, you know, the thing was, 50 years ago, they didn't write rules the way we write them now. They weren't as tight. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you know, that's where the interpretation portion comes in. And it's like, okay, now we have to have the lawyers look at all the other cases that were there at the same time and see what was going on. But, you know, what I always tried to do was, you know, make it as bulletproof as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this is, it's powerful though. That makes a lot of sense. And it's like, look, if you design the rules and everything in a way that's structured, that can ensure that the structure is strong enough to support whatever you're doing, that there aren't holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, something I wonder about going back to, you know, you mentioned high school and growing up, it almost sounds like you and, you know, because of your family and how you grew up making ends meet, that you kind of had to be more of a hustler in some ways and kind of figure out how to make things work. And, you know, maybe less for you, more for your parents. But how do we make ends meet in the face of challenges? To like now where you're really like making sure there aren't holes in the system. I don't know. To me, it seems like there's almost a conflict between this, you know, scrappy, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out one way or the other versus this more analytical engineer type of mindset. You know, almost lawyerly type of mindset of like, this is how things need to be done. Did you like shift at some point to become someone who's more focused on the structure and the rules and keeping everything together, or was that just always there?
It was probably always there. Cause like I said, I was a rules lawyer in Dungeons and Dragons in high school. You know, I still remember playing a game. I think it was called Top Secret. So it was a James Bond type game, role-playing game. And so, you know, of the roles you could be like a James Bond type character. Well, I started out, and my character had computer skills. So I somehow managed to convince the game master that because of these computer skills, before I joined the spy service, I had hacked an ATM to get enough money to buy a upgraded like weapon. Rules lawyering, you know, if I hadn't been working for the government, like that's one thing that I will say people worried about when I retired. It's like, are you going to work for a consultant? Because we don't really want to be on the opposite side of the table from you, you know, necessarily here.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, no, but it's interesting to hear that that's always kind of been there, and that people are that people clearly fear you on the other end is is something that's take that for what you will. I guess that's maybe that's a good thing, depending on who's afraid.
Yes.
But you know, I guess there's so much that we could talk about here in your experiences, and you know, I started out questioning you about your rules about. Mm-hmm. Fatherhood and how that ties together. But I mean, genuinely speaking, you know, a question I have is, are there rules or things you've learned along the way in that side of things in the family department?
I don't know. I mean, you know, every situation is different there. I mean, be flexible would obviously be the key, but you know, there were certain things, like, for example, one of my sons had always had short hair, just the way we did it.
Yeah.
And he wanted to, his senior year, grow out his hair. Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, growing out his hair meant a big fro, you know, and so he just has really curly hair.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember his name, but anyway, and so he wanted to grow it out. And some people were like, why are you letting him grow out his hair? And it's like, well, why not? It's hair. Who cares? Yeah. You know? And so it's funny because he has his senior high school picture. And right after taking that, he stopped getting haircuts until he spoke at the senior graduation. And he had a full head of curly hair.
Wow.
He was the valedictorian, and we spray dyed his hair the school colors.
Right.
And so it was just, it was something, you know, fun for him to do. And the, you know, but people were like, why are you letting him do that? I'm like, well, why wouldn't I? What is so terrible? You know, and if he wanted to go with friends who I knew were okay, then yeah, I would let him. And you know, other things like I said, he was the valedictorian. He got straight A's since middle school, all the way through high school. And so, you know, sometimes the question would come up, you know, from a family member or someone else. Well, do you make him do homework? I'm like, no, he does it himself. You know, he knows what he needs to do. He's going to do it himself.
Yeah.
Until the point where he proves otherwise, why would I, you know, clamp down on him in any way? Now there were other times, when he was much younger, he, and I like kindergarten age, he was like me in some ways, I guess. He was going to the bus, and he saw that the bus driver was a substitute. And this substitute had previously not known the route and wouldn't listen to him.
Yeah.
Can you imagine an adult not listening to a kindergartner? I just can't understand. And so he avoided the teacher who was supposed to be putting him on the bus and decided to walk home.
Yeah.
Now, we're not that far away, but, you know, there is a fairly busy street that lines our subdivision, and it caused mass panic briefly. When he wasn't on the bus and everything. Yeah. And I mean, his reasoning was I knew my way home. She didn't know how to get me home. Therefore, I will go home. And so obviously, you know, you had to talk to him about that later. There was another bus driver who wouldn't listen to him. And I don't remember if this was also kindergarten or a little later. And he got mad and called her stupid. and got in trouble for that.
Yeah.
And I talked to him and I was honest with him. I said, you're going to encounter people in this life who you believe are stupid, but you can't tell them that. You can't call them that.
It's fair. That's realistic. It's like, yeah, that does happen.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you and say there are no people in this world who, you know, you will think they don't know what they're doing, because there are, but yeah. You can't talk to them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think, like I said, being flexible in that regard and just knowing when to trust, when to steal a line from, I think it was Reagan, when to trust, when to verify. Mm. And so, you know, it's good. It's appropriate that this is a Father's Day time frame, because yeah. I do think, yeah, I'm very proud of who they are now. They have a lot left ahead of them, but I mean, they are my proudest accomplishment, just who they have become and, you know, the types of people that they are, the, you know, they're caring, they're both smart. They're both doing what they want. They have, you know, good friends, they have good relationships, and, you know, they're empathetic. They're just, all these things are everything that I could have ever hoped for them. And if either of them listen to this, they're, you know, going to be embarrassed, but
great. Yeah. Yeah. If you have a problem with this and you are somehow related by blood to David, you know who to get in touch with.
That's
actually
right.
You know what? You could at me. No, yeah. David, I'll take this one for you. You could at me, Matt Scott GW. Tweet me. Don't even DM me. Just tweet me publicly and then I'll tag you under it, David.
There we go.
To deal with it personally. No, I mean, this is all really interesting to hear. And it's interesting to kind of get in your head about how you look at things, how you approach things, just so people could better understand you beyond the simple framework of David's rules.
Mm-hmm.
But I you know, I am, you know, sort of wondering, thinking about fatherhood, and we've talked about that. Like, I think from being a young person, there are a lot of young people who either aren't sure or who flat out don't want to have kids. And I'm sure you understand with just how the world is looking and mm-hmm. how things are going, but I'm curious if you have thoughts on that. Like, if there's, because I really did want to ask you if there's anything that people are missing about parenthood that you would want the listeners and us all to know and understand. But also, if it sucks, that also works.
No, I mean, I have loved kids since I, you know, was, you know, younger, you know, when I remember the day that my youngest brother was brought home. I was in kindergarten. I ran all the way home from school. So I've always known that I wanted to be a father.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a while, quite honestly, it was hard for me to understand people who didn't want kids. In some ways it still is. I can often put myself in someone's place.
Mm-hmm.
That is one that is more difficult for me. And I think it's just so, I call it evolutionarily ingrained, whatever it is. Obviously, you know, evolution wants us to, you know, have kids. And so it's hard for me to say, is it me thinking that, or is it my genes telling me that? Mm-hmm. But whatever it is, I have always wanted kids. Now, we stopped at two, because we decided, you know, man to man was better than the zone defense.
I'm one of four. So, you know, I think my parents said, okay, we have two hands each. So that's the max.
I had a boss who had 10.
Oh.
So,
10 hands.
Well, 10 kids, okay. Not 10 hands.
No, that would have been convenient hands. For 10 yes. kids.
Yeah. But, you know, we could have had a third, but, you know, we just, I don't know. We felt okay with two. Mm-hmm. And so that is, you know, it is hard for me. Like I said, I try to put myself in the mindset, even someone who disagrees with me on a political topic or some other topic. Yeah. I try to put myself at least in their mindset. Well, here's what they're thinking when they're arguing with me. It's harder for me to do that because it's just so ingrained, but I understand it. I know some people don't want kids.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously that's, you know, a decision that everybody needs to make. So I found it very fulfilling. But that's just me. Other people find living without kids very fulfilling. So I certainly do not pass any judgment either way. But like I said, I am more proud of them than perhaps anything else. You know, I think raising two good humans is, you know, in today's world, I think is, you know, like I said, just I'm proud of it.
Yeah. One of the things I think is really interesting about today's world, too, and a reason that, you know, it may be, you know, why I at least imagine a lot of people not wanting to have kids is just the fact that we're all really being hit in the face with media constantly, with the world's problems constantly, with social media, 24-hour news cycle, all of these things. And it really does make it tough when you're like, oh, well, I could have a kid, but there are all of these issues. And I think that the other thing that's important for people to appreciate, it's like that, you know, the world could still be a beautiful thing. And I have a 3.5-year-old nephew and another nephew on the way in the next couple of months by the end of this summer. And just thinking about what the world will be like for them, you know, thankfully I'm not, you know, thankfully my sister and brother-in-law are having the kid and will, you know, will be responsible for their kids. But also I could be motivated to like, make the world a better place for them and do what I can to make it something that we're, you know, we're happy that they could be in. And I get it. There's a lot of resignation in the face of the world's problems, but you know what? There are also a lot of cool, like people trying to make progress and turn things around. So it's a nuanced thing, but actually what this has gotten me thinking about is like, in one sense, I don't know if it's just generational differences or even just differences in like how you might look at things versus how, you know, some younger folks with this popular narrative of not wanting to have kids might look at things. But I think about you in the context of RHAP and this community. And, you know, obviously, I'll say from my perspective, it's one thing as a 30-year-old to be able to like connect with the community. But I wonder for you, like, what has that been like? Obviously, as someone who is more seasoned, more experienced, more of a legend than most of us, like, I don't know, has there been anything notable in that sense over time in the community? And have you noticed, like, has it been easy for you to connect with folks? Has it been more difficult? I'm so curious just about your perspective on all that.
I mean, I think it is a little more difficult for me. I mean, everybody tends to, in most cases, kind of aggregate with their own age group. It's just natural. And so, you know, when almost all the other podcasters and much of the community is younger, it is sometimes more difficult. You know, now I don't live near, well, anybody anyway, but you know, it's not like I'm going to hang out at the bars with people in their 20s, you know, or the online equivalent of that.
Yeah.
So now this community has people my age as well, some of whom have been, you know, reading since my Reality News Online days. Nice. And the community overall is still, no matter what the age group, is still incredibly open and welcoming. Mm-hmm. And just overall supportive. And I can say that, you know, from my own experiences. I mean, I had a health issue serious health. I mean,
yeah,
serious health issue at the end of October 2020.
Right.
And posted about it because I wanted to explain to patrons why I wasn't doing the final Big Brother Why Blank Lost for that season. And the number of cards and gifts and messages that I got was absolutely overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I still have them. I still have all the cards. Some of them were handmade.
Wow.
You know, some of them were, it was just amazing. I can't even list all the different things. And so, you know, that's the community that we have here. And so from that perspective, yes, I, you know, absolutely feel, you know, a part of that community. And yeah, I can have conversations with people who are younger than my own kids. And, you know, and so it's just, it's very interesting in that way. You know, like look at some of the, even some of the players on Survivor.
Yeah.
My son knew a friend of Zach.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. He heard things a couple of times before I did from this friend of Zach's.
Mm-hmm.
Just some, you know, pieces of information.
Right.
And so, you know, you get that from these different worlds. You know, there have been, there was at least one person who said to my son, wait, your dad is David Bloomberg, the podcaster, you know, which my son was like, you actually know him, you know? You know, I had someone at work. I had a coworker, not a close coworker, but in the same area,
yeah,
who came up to me and he was like, you're David Bloomberg. It's like, yeah, yeah. You know, and, you know, we became friends. And so, it's, you know, it's just interesting that, yeah, there is this age difference and sometimes, yeah, it can be different, but I also use it as learning. I mm-hmm. feel that I have learned a lot from younger people, younger podcasters, you in particular, you and some of the podcasts that you have set up.
Yeah.
I have learned things, you know, just that I don't feel like I would have otherwise learned.
Hmm.
Everything from, you know, like, why do people put pronouns in their bios? Okay. Yeah. I never understood that. I was like, well, I'm a he. Why would I put that in there? Oh, it is to support and, you know, other people who may not use those same pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood that until there was a podcast where it was discussed.
Yeah.
And so I have, you know, since added those. Just things like that, that I don't know your perspective. I don't know lots of perspective. Yes. My, you know, my family had to make ends meet, but that doesn't put me in the same position as everybody else. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had lots of advantages, even if I had some disadvantages, even if I had to work in some areas, I had lots of advantages that other people don't have. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this community has definitely helped me in that way, to understand it. Even, you know, you can teach an old dog new tricks.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Look, I wasn't expecting it to like you to end there, but that's like a good a solid point right there. And you know, and I think the other aspect of it that I was thinking about as you were saying that was even the first episode of this Pod Friends season with T-Bird mm-hmm. Cooper. And, you know, we were having a conversation that was sort of similar to this. And she was saying, you know, I learned so much from people that I talk with. I've learned from you in this conversation. And she asked me about like the definition of, you know, when I use the word queer, for instance, like what does that mean? And obviously, as you know, too, I'm sure. And a lot of people know there's been evolution with mm-hmm. like, even with that word, even in my lifetime, I could think of an evolution with that word and how it's been used from being, you know, more of like an insult and less acceptable to being something that's really claimed by a group and identity. And there's so much there, right? But I think that there's also credit that you deserve within that, just like with T-Bird, is you have to have an open mind. And, you know, sometimes, okay, David, first of all, I wouldn't have called you an old dog, but
later days, you can't we'll go with teach. Evie. We'll go with Evie later days.
Yeah. Sometimes you can't teach someone in their later days. Yeah. I don't even love that. Sorry, Evie. I hope Evie's not. Sorry, Evie. Yeah. Evie is tuned in.
Yeah.
And so I think that like, yeah, you can teach someone in their later days new tricks. You could sometimes people aren't open though. And so you deserve credit for people being open and I don't know, just being welcoming when it comes to that stuff. But I want to ask, do you have an idea of, you know, you've retired from your full-time work, but do you have an idea of what you imagine your future with this community and what the trajectory would be in an ideal world, you know? Imagining that like health isn't a factor or other things aren't factors, we can't predict those, right. Unfortunately, yeah. Oftentimes. Like, what would you like your future in the community to look like?
I mean, I definitely want to, you know, continue podcasting. You know, ideally, I would do more of it, but there are so many great podcasters already covering so much.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's an interesting area. And so I don't know. I'm open to, you know, all sorts of different things. I've tried, you know, as people know, either from Twitter or from the podcasts, you know, I jumped into TikTok. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not doing dances on TikTok. I'm not, you know.
Talk about your TikTok, your relationship with TikTok, because you are maybe the most prolific rap personality on TikTok. Other than TikTok Nicole, I have to give that shout to Nicole Horn for that. But yeah, what is going on with you and TikTok, David?
So what happened was, you know, I thought of TikTok as the same thing most people do. Oh, it's a bunch of people dancing and kids these days. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, the RHAP social media coordinator, Hannah, did a presentation about TikTok. Were you on that?
I was there.
And I was like, well, okay, I'll give it a try. I'll take a look at it. And I, you know, started doing a few things, and I saw that, and that was one of the most important things that Hannah said, was it's not just what the cliche says it is.
Yeah.
A lot of it is, but it's not just that. And I found a lot of other communicators. There's science communicators, there's doctors, there's just all sorts of people on there. And so yeah, I started just putting clips on TikTok. And you know, my first, what at the time I considered to be, you know, blew up was when Evie did a stitch or a duet with me? I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. Where I had done a clip from a secret scene of them playing drums at camp, which was really banging pots and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And Evie had some friends and they kind of, you know, sang along with the song there. And that obviously drew more attention with Evie being, you know, a contestant at the time. Since then, I try to do one a day, at least one a day. During the Survivor season, I was, you know, sometimes, or, you know, Big Brother season, well, Celebrity Big Brother, I was doing maybe two, sometimes three a day. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's a stretch to get one a day. You know, I'm covering other things. Yeah. During the Australian Survivor, I did very, very condensed mini Why Blank Losts. Super condensed. I mean, you know, anyone who watches the podcast normally knows we can go anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half or longer.
Right.
And these were a minute to 90 seconds, sometimes maybe almost 2 minutes, but just focusing on the main topics. And so, you know, I expect I'll be doing that again for South African Survivor. And I'm sure that I'll be doing more TikToks as Big Brother gears up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So actually one question I asked before I ask more about what's ahead is okay, this might sound ridiculous, but I do not TikTok, David. I do not TikTok. And I know many people who don't TikTok. What is the appeal of TikToking? It's weird because when you say TikTok, it sounds natural. When I say TikTok, it sounds like I'm talking about a clock. And people are like, what are clocks anymore? Like digital clocks don't TikTok. So why TikTok? And how does someone get started with that? Because I'm intimidated.
I mean, the why was just honestly because of Hannah's presentation, you know, and I thought, well, I'll give it a shot and see where it goes. Now, do I have a huge number of followers? No, I have like 1400 since I started, which was somewhere around the beginning of Survivor 41. I've got like 52,000 likes, which seems like a lot. But it's not like I'm ever blowing up. There were a couple of like, I think Celebrity Big Brother things that, you know, blew up to 50,000 type views. Mm-hmm. There was a part of an interview that I did with Voce where he talked about Survivor having a fairness judge that went up to like 50 some thousand views.
Yeah.
Usually they probably get about 1200 views, sometimes a couple thousand, a few thousand, you know, sometimes they'll go to 10. I would expect with Big Brother coming back, for whatever reason, I think Big Brother gets more, at least Celebrity Big Brother did. Mm. I don't know. It's just something interesting. You know, it helps feed my creative side. I've been on Twitter a long time, but there are certain things you can't do on Twitter. Or sometimes I'll make a joke on Twitter and then I'll turn it into a TikTok. It just, you know, sometimes I see something and I'm like, oh, that's funny the way that connects. I'll put it together. I don't know. I put them on Instagram too, but I'm like barely on Instagram. Mm. So that's, you know, like I have a few hundred people who follow me on Instagram. But you know, maybe I increase that. I know that there are people out there who they Twitch, they YouTube, they all those other things. I'm not a gamer, so I don't know about, you know, doing something like that. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. It probably won't, you know, I don't expect to ever get like a retirement supplement from TikTok.
It happened.
Yeah. I mean, like a while ago, I enabled tips on Twitter because I was like, well, why not? If someone really desperately wants to give me money, who am I to say no? But like, this is the first time I've ever mentioned that. I never even mentioned it on Twitter.
Yeah.
In most cases, quite honestly, there's probably something better you could do with your money. Probably something that will help the world more.
Probably though is the important word here. Maybe if anyone feels inclined from this interview, if you're listening to this point and you are so inspired, reach deep into your Twitter pockets and give David I don't know how the tips work. But this is the thing. This is something that I, as we kind of get closer to the end of this interview, something that I'm so fascinated by, which is that you have this track record as a creator. before many of us were creating, you know, and, but, you know, before a lot of people in general were creating, I mean, like in the world there, that goes without saying. And yet you're still managing to stay ahead in terms of some of those things, whether it's enabling tips on Twitter, or deep into those pockets, or, you know, whether it's like, whether it's getting on TikTok. And I'm just curious of advice that you have for people on how to stay, you know, how to stay ahead of the game, or on the, I don't know if it's called like the bleeding edge or whatever, but how to stay ahead of the game when it comes to creating and doing what you're doing. Because, I mean, again, I've even looked at TikTok and some of these things, like, look, I worked with social media. I know enough about social media. I don't need to touch TikTok or whatever it might be. How do you, how, what advice do you have for people to like stay engaged and stay on top of all of that?
I don't know that I'm the right. I know, and I thank you for the compliments about staying on the leading edge. I don't know that I've ever been on the leading edge of the more recent things. I was with writing about Survivor. There's, you know, no doubt about that. I wasn't with podcasting. You know, I had the opportunity to try podcasting early on, and I was like, I don't really understand this. I don't have time for this. And you know, even when it came to video podcasting, Jessica was the one who had to convince me, as she often reminds me. And really, it took the pandemic for that. Part of it was I didn't really feel comfortable putting myself on a screen. You know, does, do people really want to look at me? You know, yes. They hear me. Well, but with the pandemic and so many people at the time being, you know, they weren't having their commutes to work. Like I wasn't. They were indoors. They wanted more of that engagement. And so that's why I did it. TikTok, you know, there were a lot of people there ahead of me, and I'm still way behind lots of other people. It was just something I decided, well, I'll give it a shot and, you know, I'll spend a little time on it. Twitter, I really only got onto to promote my website way back when. Even Facebook. I got onto Facebook for two reasons originally. One was to promote my website, and two was because like my family was making announcements there that I didn't know about. Like my mother one time said, oh yeah, and then when your cousin has the baby, I'm like, wait, she's pregnant?
Oh god.
Oh yeah, she announced it on Facebook. It's like, oh, okay, I guess I gotta get on Facebook.
Yeah.
you know. I now wish that I didn't see that cousin on Facebook, but yeah, well, you know,
I was gonna say you could run in the opposite direction.
That,
nowadays,
well, that one actually did run in the opposite
direction. Oh, so, well, look at that.
You know, no, I mean, towards the
Anyway, oh yeah, I'm not surprised, but yeah, Facebook in general, not the place to be these days.
You know, Twitter. Anyone who follows me on Twitter, they know it's a combination of Survivor and reality TV, science, politics, among other random things. And, you know, I'm sure some people throw this off. I know that there have been people who followed me for Survivor, saw my political stuff and was like, oh, you should stick to Survivor, or I'm not going to do this or whatever. All right. Bye. You know, that's fine. I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I'm, you know, going to still try to make this world a better place, whether it's through, you know, reality TV or through voicing my views on other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's powerful stuff. And, you know, there's so much I could ask about and dig into, but we have to wrap up or else we could. I don't want Marianne to be upset with me. And, you know,
well, we've got a lot of time before we get to Marianne.
No, David, what the people don't know is that we're at the 5 hour mark of the interview. I just cut it down because Scott St. Pierre said to me, Matt, this file's too big. I can't upload it to the podcast app. Marianne took up all of our storage for the month. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it. But I want to ask, you know, thinking of your story and summing it up, I don't know. First of all, I would love to say it would be great if you wrote a book or had a documentary about your life and your story, summing it all up. Hopefully you're working on that book. But more than that, I ask this question to everyone: if your life were a book or documentary, what would the title be and why? Do you have a title?
Well, you asked this on Twitter at one point, or maybe it was the patron Facebook.
I did ask it on Twitter, actually, at one point.
And my snap reaction was, why David won? Okay. And since then, I knew you were going to ask that question. Okay. And I've thought about it. And I'm still going to stick with it. Because I have had a lot of things happen in my life. You know, I mean, within the last 4 years, I've almost died twice. Okay. And yet I'm still here. And my career did not go in the path that I thought it would. It didn't necessarily end on the terms that I thought it would. Mm-hmm. But I worked through it and I'm here. I have, my wife had health issues. She, a year ago, was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm. And she just finished, just last week, finished radiation. Looks like it's gone.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so, you know, I still think even with all of the things that have gone on, you know, I'm not Bill Gates. I'm not someone powerful, super powerful, super rich, whatever, but I still think that, like I said, through my life, I have won. Hopefully I'll keep on for another, few decades here. But I do think that combined with the obvious play on, the rules
by the mug.
Yes. I think that would be the book title.
Wow. That's powerful. And it's powerful because just to hear that appreciation for what you've overcome in that process. And you also said this earlier, but there are other people in this world who've had more challenges and less privileges and, less advantages. There are also people who've had more of those. But I think beyond all of that, something that I appreciate and I think kind of came up when I was talking with T-Bird on Pod Friends. No confusion there. It's just that, everyone has their worst. And, your worst might be different than my worst, but it's still our worst. And that's kind of something that we have to navigate and go through. And I appreciate you sharing so much of that journey and who you are and what makes you who you are. I want to ask, you mentioned your title, Why David Won. I want to ask, is there anything about yourself, first of all, that you wish other people knew, just to start there?
Wow.
Big question, right? You're like, you're going to have to buy the book one day.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I did almost write a book on Survivor, but that was, bad timing. And then, Boston Rob went out there and wrote his book. And then, so who knows? I mean, it's possible.
I have to say, by the way, David, between us, not a great book, not a great book. I have the audiobook version.
I can't remember if I ended up getting that. I don't think I did. But I think I've seen clips, but
all respect to him, but yes, the audiobook is very fascinating to listen to.
Yeah.
Anyway, you were saying Boston Rob ruins your life when he cut his book out there.
I don't know. There's so many different things, as, one thing that I do is for my podcasts, I prepare, and Jessica has made jokes about this, I prepare extensive notes because I never want to forget anything. And inevitably, I still do. So I'm sure that when we're done here, I will be like, I wish I had brought up this. I mean, there are all sorts of different stories, some of which I've told before, some of which I haven't told before. There are areas where I've been active that I have become less active. I might get more active in, that I don't know. I it's hard to say, what would people be interested in knowing about me? You know, even the questions that you asked me, I feel like I often veered off in different directions there.
There are a lot of directions to go in.
Yes.
Lots of twists and turns.
Yes. So, so I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'm better with the direct questions than the, you know, and then I still take them off in different ways.
Yeah. But I think that that's kind of part of what's interesting is that there's so much more to everyone who mm-hmm. we sit and interview with or who I sit and interview with. But really, I keep saying we in reference to this because I do really feel like the listeners who are tuning in now are like part of that journey. Something I like to do in wrapping up is just give the interviewee a chance to kind of leave the audience with any final words beyond the plugs and all that stuff. Like, is there anything that you want to say or hope that people will, you know, talk directly to the audience? Anything you hope that they'll take away from today? Whatever you want to say, it's the floor is yours, David.
I think just, you know, with the timing that this is airing, happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. You know, I don't think I understood until I had kids of my own, I didn't understand how parents feel about their own kids. You know, I moved away from my own parents. My kids have moved away from me. It is difficult. At least for me it is. And it's you know, it's difficult to let go, but you know, you just have to let them do what they need to do and be happy in their accomplishments. And so, you know, I know I mentioned it before. My sons, they're my proudest accomplishment, and I don't want to take away from what they did. I don't want to make it sound like I, you know, but, you know, hopefully somewhere along the lines, we did something right. And, so I guess that would be my closing thought.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to, for watching this week's episode of Pod Friends and this conversation I had with David Bloomberg. It's so interesting when we associate people with a thing or with looking at the world a certain way. And I think for David, especially, where he talks so much about the rules and talks about why people lost, there is so much we hear from him, and yet there's so much we still don't. And so I want to thank him for opening up about his journey and about how at the end of the day, even through so many different challenges, even ones that I didn't expect to hear about along the way, that he's still winning. And there's that resilience. There's a positive message there that things aren't always perfect, but we can win. I look forward to talking with David more about why he won. But before signing out, just want to encourage you, if you enjoyed this, number one, to share the podcast, like post a link, use hashtag podfriends and hashtag RHAP just to spread the word, and tell a friend even, as the iconic Bryce Isaiah would say. And I mentioned at the top of this episode, happy Pride, it's Pride Month. But also want to encourage you, if you're listening and if you're a Survivor fan like me, like David, that you check out the Pride Has Spoken, a podcast series celebrating LGBTQ+ survivors. I'm doing that with Dr. Evie Jagoda and with the one and only Grace Leader, and just thrilled that we could put that out there into the world and talk about Survivor in a lens that we don't often hear about, which is also what Pod Friends is all about. Looking forward to next week's episode, where you will hear from none other than Beth Dixon, who you might know from the Drag Race podcast and from so much more. And so I'm thrilled that Beth and I could sit down for a conversation. And I am thrilled that you could be a fly on the wall for that conversation, because I think it's a really solid way to kind of cap off these Pride Month episodes. But thanks again, everyone, for being on the journey. And as I say at the end of each and every one of these episodes, thank you for being a pod friend. Take care.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.